Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for putting a pep in our step this afternoon. It's Monday the 5th of July and this is Game On. Coming up today, Johnny Doyle and Niall Moran on a J weekend with lots of talking points.
And I know the rule officially says if there's a goal scoring opportunity, if you're inside the 21 or inside the D, the arc, it's a penalty and a sin bin. But to me, that wasn't a goal scoring opportunity. That's a harsh call in my view.
Tell me this, what's the latest situation with Stephen Cluxton, your goalkeeper?
I don't know is the honest answer. Stephen has stepped away, as everyone could see, he wasn't with us today. And I'm sure all the Dublin supporters and admirers of Stephen Cluxton all over the country will be hoping that that's not the last we've seen of Stephen Cluxton in a Dublin jersey.
Plenty to talk about indeed. One day out from the semi-final stage at the Euros, Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly will tell us who can go all the way from here.
And they are there. They are into the semi-finals. Denmark progress at the expense of Czech Republic. They have won by 2-1. Well, it's Wembley next for Denmark, and who knows after that.
And there's another one, and it's Jordan Henderson who gets it. Again, the marking from the set piece is pretty abysmal, and Henderson is able to glance the header home, and England go 4-0 up.
Plus, Bernard Jackman on Ireland's win over Japan, and Ian Henderson on captaining the Lions this week.
I feel a fair sense as my job of a captain is to ensure that those guys are able to express themselves as best possible. For me personally, I'm just incredibly honoured to be able to do this, and I'm looking forward to it, and I'm incredibly excited about leading what I think is an incredible bunch of guys.
Now, it was a good a weekend as any that I remember for sport. So please send us in your sporting highlights. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now, Alan Cawley is with me here in studio. Alan, it was an absolutely fantastic weekend of sports. So much to talk about, so much to get through. What was your highlight?
It's coming.
Oh,
home.
No.
It's
coming.
we've touted them all along, Marie, and I tell you, we're in danger that it might be coming home. It's looking very likely at the moment. They obviously played very well on Saturday night. We've established last week that we are allowed like this England team. I mentioned here last week to you that I'm a big fan of Southgate. I think what he's done in terms of getting the group together and the job he's done in dampening down expectations, which is a difficult job in itself, I'd say, in the UK. He's done a brilliant job. But the players are quite likeable as well. They have a good team. They obviously took care of Ukraine on Saturday night. And now that we're down to the last four, Marie, I dread to think that it is coming home, but they obviously face a big task against Denmark, which we'll discuss later. And then I think Italy may come through, so they've a tough game then against Italy. So, but I do think they've a brilliant chance. That was my highlight.
I did enjoy the pictures of them in the unicorns in the pool. They're hilarious.
Well, he's created that club culture. That's the thing. Like, we delved a bit into it last week, and that's what Southgate has created. And you look at the group and the togetherness amongst them, young lads as well. They're loving life, living the dream at the moment, obviously in playing in a major tournament, and they're not really allowing the pressure to get to them. It looked like they actually relished it on Saturday night, because that was a game where there was a bit of pressure on them because they were all expected to go out and take care of Ukraine quite comfortable, which they did, but they didn't show any signs of nervousness or any signs of the pressure getting to them at all. I felt as though they're embracing the challenge, which is what you want to see at this stage. As I said, they have a tougher game now against Denmark on Wednesday evening, but they look to be absolutely loving life at the moment.
Yeah, we had Jack Byrne on before the tournament started, and he knows a few of them, including Phil Foden, and he did say that they're not afraid of these big games. They play with kind of abandonment. They don't have that fear that teams of the past might have had, and you can see that in them. They're expressing themselves.
Yeah, and I think that comes from the manager as well, because he obviously allows that. I know people will argue that he might be quite conservative in his team lineup, but I think he's picked teams to go out for each match to obviously take care of the opposition, and we saw that on Saturday night when the onus was going to be on them, that they would have more of the ball and take the game to Ukraine. He made the two attacking changes by bringing Sancho into the team and obviously Mount as well. So, as I say, I'm a big fan of Southgate. And that's the one thing he mentioned, Marie. He's been there as a player, and he always felt coming into the squad when he was a player there that there was almost that fear factor around England. He spoke about it on a podcast I mentioned a while ago, and he was brilliant about it. But just about that fear factor, that it was almost a case of the individuals that were coming in to represent their country at the time, the fear was they didn't want to be the scapegoat that would have been plastered all over the papers the following day if they made a mistake. So he wanted to eradicate that totally from this squad and the culture that, amongst this group. And I think he's done a brilliant job so far. Of course, the hype is going through the roof in England, but he's done a brilliant job to dampen it down. And on top of that, Marie, as well, they're a very good team.
Yeah,
they're very good players.
Well, you know, their success is coinciding with England coming out of their restrictions. So I can imagine how bananas it is going to be, sure, if football does come home.
It will be absolute carnage.
It'll be absolutely crazy. Yeah, I was at the golf for the weekend, so that was my sporting highlight at the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open in the Mount Juliet Estate. And it was brilliant because there was fans there. Well, the sun was shining for the first couple of days, which was lovely, but there was fans there. 2,500, maybe a little bit more if you include some of the staff as well. And they were really vocal. They were just brilliant. It was great to see all the Irish guys doing there. It would have been nicer maybe if they'd finished a little bit higher or kind of more in contention on the last day. But Shane Lowry did have a very good last day. And it was Lucas Herbert then who won it, kind of one of these players that wouldn't have a huge amount of experience, just one win on the European Tour beforehand. But in fairness to him, he was under some amount of pressure. He led from the start, and on that final day, I thought he was going to throw it away a few times. He was a bit loose, but he kept pulling it back, and he just deserved so much credit for it because he was under just savage pressure with the chasing pack as well, and he made it really enjoyable. And it was a great few days, and it was lovely to be at an event.
And well done to you as well, Marie. Obviously a big gig for yourself, so fair play and congratulations. And yeah, I'm delighted it all went well, and it looked brilliant on the telly, as you see the crowd and all. It just makes such a difference. I know we've mentioned this numerous times now, even the hurling yesterday. I watched all the hurling over the weekend and it was brilliant. And the Clare Tipperary match, even I think it was only 3,000 that were in, but the atmosphere was electric. It was and such a brilliant game as well. So I know there was a big controversial decision which we'll discuss, but like we've mentioned it numerous times, Marie, there's no comparison whatsoever. And hopefully it's a sign of things to come in terms of moving forward with more crowds getting into the games as well. But it does make all the difference.
Yeah, my son came home. He was at it actually with my dad, and he got a jersey. He got his litter. The programme, he was absolutely delighted to be at it. And just to, I don't know if he was supposed to go up to the players, but he did anyway. He went up and tried to get
that's
a few
in terms of memories for the kids as well, Marie. You know, and they've missed out on all that as well. The young kids going to the games, and that's one thing you see with the GAA, that all the kids coming on after the match is brilliant.
Yeah, because they missed that part of the growing up for the last few years, not been able to go to the matches and develop the love for it and all the rest. So it is great to see people back. Now we are going to turn our attention to Gaelic football. I'm delighted to say that Johnny Doyle joins us on the line. Johnny, how are things?
Not so bad now, Marie. All is good, thank God. A good win for Kildare, so we're happy for a small time anyway.
Good to hear. Look, we're going to get straight into probably, as we unfortunately sometimes have to do, is things that happened off the field. And what seems to be dominating the conversation from the weekend is Stephen Cluxton and whether he is gone or not. We had heard Desi Farrell there at the top of the show saying that he wasn't sure. There have been a lot of rumours for the last few weeks that he has gone, and obviously he wasn't at the game yesterday. Look, as someone who was a very long servant of their own county as well, Johnny, just what are your thoughts on the Stephen Cluxton situation?
Oh God, there's so many thoughts going through my head. It's hard to believe. You listen to Desi, it's hard to believe that he, you know, and Desi's a very genuine person. I know Desi through involvement with the GPA and stuff like that. But it is hard to believe that he doesn't know what the update is on it. As you say, the whole country is talking about it. You know, from we all know that Stephen is a very private person. You know, I don't if ever he's done an interview, but he hasn't done too many. And if he's going to slip away, you know, someone of Stephen Cluxton's stature and what he's achieved in the game, and let's be very honest about it, he's a player of his generation. He's probably the most influential player of the last 20 years. Whether he wants to or not, he's not going to be let slip away into the, you know, eventually either Dublin are going to have to say something, or draw a line that he is gone, and he mightn't celebrate it too much because that type of character he is. But the GAA world, particularly in Dublin, will celebrate his achievements, and rightly so. But yeah, I suppose it's a bit like the Pope. We're still waiting for the white smoke out of Dublin, and who knows? We can surmise all we want, but I suppose none of us know where it is. I would have felt, you know, if he was gone, you know, he would have said that, or at least Desi would have maybe, you know, although he wants to give him enough time, but there comes a point in time where decisions have to be made. And to be fair to the players, and to be fair, and particularly Evan Comerford, who, you know, he's big boots to fill whenever them boots have to be filled, but maybe not knowing where he is or where Stephen Clucton is, put extra pressure on him as well. So, look, it's a case of wait and see, but I think there'll have to be news sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think so as well, because, as you said, it's Evan Comerford, really, because no matter what he does, while people are wondering whether the baton has been passed or not, there's going to be so much focus and attention on his performance, and then obviously comparing him to Stephen and people wondering whether or not he is an option. And look, Dublin are such a huge team and they've so many fans, and the fans have followed them for so many years. They'd like to know as well, and then at least we can maybe start back talking about performances and the Dublin team and not wondering after every game whether he is going to emerge out of that tunnel or off that bus. It would be good to hear from him, but we're going to have to wait for a little while. Your career, Johnny, coincided with quite a lot of his, and you've said there how influential he has been and what an important role he's played for Dublin just from watching him and playing near him. How good is he?
He was very good, and you know, we would have planned to try, you know, at times how we were going to maybe curtail his kickouts and how he set up every attack was set up by Clucson, and to try read him and to try understand, you know, there's lots of people, you know, analysed it a lot longer than me, and there just wasn't any figuring out, because he was just able to put the ball where he wanted it, whether that was short or long, and all he needed was, you know, half a yard. His vision was outstanding. All he needed was a runner, and well, he had loads of options throughout his career from whatever players. Like, he probably really came into his own when Shane Ryan sort of moved from defence to the middle and was that sort of, you know, maybe not an old style traditional midfielder where he'd be, you know, a big towering presence. He was just a running midfielder, but he picked them out so many times from them hard runs. And then, you know, Paul Flynn and Dermot Connolly and these guys, and obviously when Fenton came to the fore, you know, they all different type of players, but it didn't matter to Clucks that he was able to make that Dublin team tick. And you know, he was a generation type player. And you know, I would have remembered, we would have done a bit of training, you know, how quick the kick out came. So, you know, and some of the stuff we would have done, the ball hadn't gone out over the bar in training, and there was another ball into play, trying from a forward point of view, trying to be ready for these quick outs, and there was nothing could prepare you for how quick he could put a ball out. And you know, he dictated the game. He slowed it down when he had to, he sped it up when he had to, but he found a man, you know, 90-95% of the time, and he was just a fantastic player. And you know, like, he has to come to an end whenever that is, and if that is now, you know, there will be a lot of celebration of his career, because, as I say, he changed the game, really, when, you know, not alone in Dublin, but throughout the country. You know, the day of the 50-50 kick out, you know, he put that to bed after you know, maybe 100 years of the goalkeeper with the big rugby boots driving it out the field. That day was gone when Stephen Clucston arrived, you know, and you can see that throughout the country, and every young goalkeeper that's trying to, he's only a free taker now rather than a goalkeeper kicking it out. He, you know, and he changed that, and he certainly was a one in a generation type of player. And you know, in one way, from a Kildare point of view, I'm sort of hoping we've seen back him, but as a GAA fan, you know, the longer he's there, you do enjoy watching him.
And you played for quite a long time as well. You know, when he is like advancing in years and been so consistent, do you think that he would be physically able to stay on for a few more years?
I think he would. Obviously, the position he plays probably helps him that bit more. That, you know, maybe didn't have the injuries, obviously, down the years, which leave maybe a bit of a scar on the body, no matter how well they heal. He certainly, from you know, talking to maybe former players that played with him and stuff like that, his preparation was second to none. He lived the game, you know, some of his, the way he analysed the game when things didn't go his way, he was able to analyse it, and he was very, very professional in what he did in an amateur game. So, but, you know, having the hunger, the drive, and sometimes it's not even the training itself, it's having to be at a particular place, at a particular time, you know, it's the coming and going, it's the build-up, and, you know, everybody prepares for games differently, you know, but it's that nervous energy coming into a game. It's, the hype and you know, in Dublin that's as big as it is in any county. So you have to deal with all those things as well. And sometimes, you know, Marie, you know, when I was there, I just loved being there, loved every bit of it. But then the spark went, the fire quenched, and it was time to go. And, you know, I don't know if that has happened to Stephen Clarkson. Maybe it has. You know, none of us will know. But certainly, you know, he's one you would imagine that minds the body, and he really has changed the game from the length and breadth of the country. And as I say, if he does go, he'd be duly missed.
Yeah, he will. Well, as you said, hopefully we will find out soon enough. And I think Wexford do deserve a lot of credit because they really dug deep and put in a performance that they can certainly be proud of.
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, you know, like I watched a bit of Wexford and Wicklow and, you know, it was nip and tuck. And I know Wicklow had a few injuries and stuff like that. And you were thinking, God, a great victory. And they hadn't won the first round in 7 years. And, you know, you saw what it meant to Shane Roach and the Wexford players. But in one corner, you were sort of thinking, the juggernaut is coming down the road for you, lads. That celebration won't be long lived. But in fairness, you have to give them huge credit. Whether it's a case, there's probably a case for Wexford maybe just going at it. Have Dublin come back a little bit into the pack? I probably think they have. You know, they've lost, you know, whether Stephen Clarkson has gone or not, but they've lost huge players. You know, some of the best players to ever play the game over the last number of years, most recently Keane Sullivan. So, you know, there's probably a little bit of that as well. But I think a lot of teams, after looking at Dublin at the weekend, would probably just, you know, maybe hold their heads a little bit higher, saying, you know what, I'd love a crack at Dublin maybe 2 or 3 years ago. You mightn't have said that. So, look, Wexford do deserve a lot of credit. Now, listen, you don't want to be patronising. They were still beaten, but mm-hmm. certainly I thought they went out very admirably in Wexford Park yesterday.
Will Kildare be one of those teams who are going to look at Dublin and say, OK, I think we might be able to do something against them?
Well, Maria, you know, and I don't know whether this is years of scarring of Kildare football for me, but we certainly won't be looking at Dublin anytime soon. We've got a really tough game against Wexford against Westmeath. And I know that's an old cliche, you know, the old one game at a time. But certainly in Kildare, if we start looking any more than the next one, we normally end up in trouble and licking our wounds. So while there was lots of good performances yesterday, there was a lot of work needed as well. There was a lot of sloppy stuff. You know, we've kicked some good scores, but we left again a bit like the promotion game with Meath in the last game of the league. We just left awfully hanging in there. You know, those times we went 7 points up, and you were thinking, let's put this game to bed. But no, we left them hanging in. As I say, awfully, we're a little bit shy in front of goals, and you think, you know, the one thing Westmeath have is some really, really good forwards, and if they get the chances, they create the chances that obviously they will be in trouble. So there's a lot of work to do in Kildare, and there's a lot of young lads coming through. You know, we lost Paul Cribben to a bad injury. There's talks of Daniel Flynn maybe back, may not be, but he hasn't played any league football. I can't see him starting. You know, Daniel's a fantastic footballer, but he need a bit of game time as well. So look, delighted to come out of Portlaoise with a win, but you know, you'd be going into the Westmeath game, and as I say, you wouldn't be putting your house on Kildare after yesterday's performance.
Yeah, especially if you were watching that second half performance from Westmeath against Laois as well, and they ended up racking up 3-20 in that game. So really impressive for them in the second half. But look, we're only in early July, and the managerial merry-go-round is starting already. Mike Quirk has resigned as the Laois football manager after that defeat to Westmeath. It's tough business, the inter-county management, isn't it, Johnny?
Oh, it's really tough, you know, and it's tough. It's tough for Mike Quirk, who's a really good guy. It's probably it needs a root and branch sort of analysis in Laois. You know, it's probably the end of an era. There were a lot of players with a lot of mileage on the clock. You know, you look at John O'Loughlin, Ross Munley, you know, Colin Begley, Kieran Lillis. These guys have been there for an awful long time. It probably needs a new impetus of young players to come into that Laois team. So they have a lot of work to do. And in fairness, I suppose Mike probably feels that it's time for someone else to have a go. But it's going to take time in Laois. You know, I know there's a lot of good work going on with underage, but it is going to take time. And certainly there needs to be for Laois football a few a few heads to get together and put together a plan over the next, you know, 4 or 5 years, because that was as big a defeat to Shipton in a long number of years, and it's not something we have seen from Laois, although, you know, they have digressed in the last couple of years. But again, I didn't see that sort of defeat coming, so they're going to be hurting today, Marie, and certainly they've a little bit of soul searching to do. But, you know, listen, the management is tough business. It's results-driven business, and, you know, like, in fairness to Mike Quirk, he's a really good guy, and, you know, he can only work with the players he has, and you need to be, you know, the quality coming through from underage has to be there, and it's tough business, and look, there's always casualties, and we've seen Mike being one of the first to go.
Yeah, and I'd say there will be a few more casualties as well over the coming weeks. And just in terms of some of the other big performances at the weekend, Monaghan 121, Fermanagh 14, and look, we know how difficult that Ulster Championship can be, but a good win there for Monaghan, and a huge one for Armagh, really, when you just look at the score that they racked up against Antrim, 4-15, and there probably will, it's fair to say, be tougher tests for both of those teams to come.
And it will, and they're pipped against each other in the next round of the Ulster title, which would wet a lot of lips for even the neutrals going to that game, you know. Both teams came through comfortably enough, as you rightly point out, and I expected both teams to come through. I suppose from a Monaghan point of view, and a worry for them is Conor McManus's injury. You know, how bad is that? Were quick to come out with a dead leg. It looked a little bit more to me. So, and even how bad is that dead leg? Because a dead leg in a couple of days, and you can be right, or it could take a couple of weeks, depending on where he got and stuff like that. So he didn't look comfortable, and that would be a big worry for Monaghan going into that Armagh match. And Armagh seem to be a team that is building, have built over the last couple of years to some really fine players, and they just need to be finding their range. So it is going to be a pulsating round, the next round with them. You know, it's the Division 1 clash now, and it's one that I'm really looking forward to. And I know, even knowing Kieran, even though they had a comprehensive win, he'd be taking lots out of that game to make sure that lads keep their feet on the ground and get ready for the Monaghan game. And it's one I'm certainly looking forward to.
And Galway had a decent win over Roscommon as well. How do you think Pádraig Tóibh will be feeling after the weekend?
But in fairness to Pádraig, he's had a roller coaster, an emotional roller coaster, if nothing else. He's had some really good highs and some bad lows as well, you know. So, but I think in general, I think he'd be relieved to get that one over. It had the potential to be a banana skin. We've seen Roscommon being very dominant in Connacht, and they've had big steps over the last couple of years in both Galway and Mayo. So I think he'd be relieved. I think there's a good bit to work on. Certainly, I thought at times they looked very slick up front. But again, they'll be cautiously going forward. I think they'll be very happy, but again, there's a little bit of work to be done, and I'm sure he'll be, over the next couple of weeks, he'll be tweaking a few things and trying to get that little bit more hunger in them for the bigger test that lie ahead. But certainly, I think he will be relieved. He'll be happy this morning. But I'd say already he's back at the drawing board looking for improvement.
Yeah, and I'd say I'd be happy to have that opportunity as well to make those improvements. Okay, Johnny Doyle, thanks so much for joining us. It was relief for the Galway footballers. I'm not sure how the Galway hurlers will be feeling, though. We'll chat to Niall Moran about it after this break.
Game on 2FM.
Now it is time to turn our attention to hurling, and I don't think there's anywhere else that we can start by other than what happened at the Gaelic grounds over the weekend, and of course that penalty decision and the sin binning. Niall Moran is with us. Niall, there has been so much talked about this over the last 24 hours. So there was a penalty for Tipperary, very controversial one. Referee James Owen has been getting quite a lot of stick since it, because it was, he obviously interpreted it as a goal scoring opportunity. What were your thoughts on it, Niall?
I suppose, Marie, in real time, I suppose, like, obviously you're incredulous as to what had happened, no different to what Brian Lohan had said. I couldn't see at that time where the goal was going to come from. It had a huge impact on the game. It really affected Clare. You could actually see it in their faces. Even near the end of the game, the shock in some of them, John Cannon coming off the pitch, you could see him gesturing like as in what the hell had happened down there. Did it change the complexion of the game? Definitely. Did it alter what the final result was going to be? Maybe not. Tip were kind of starting to get a grip on the game. Clare started to make some mistakes, but really I just think for lads who have given so much, for a decision like that to kind of go against them, like it's hard enough to get up on a Monday morning after losing a championship match, and in the nature of which what happened, it's worse again. But I'm going to kind of compromise myself a little bit in saying that, Marie. Like, that would have been my real-time judgment. And even look now, that is my judgment. But I suppose on reflection, and the more you kind of look into it and read about these things, I know Fergal Horgan had done a kind of a piece earlier on in the year before the league ever started, when he was quizzed about kind of this whole idea of the sin bin and the whole idea of the advantage. And just one of the things that he said was that it never said at any point in the ruling that it needs to be a clear and obvious goal-scoring chance. And I think that word clear is really probably is what's costing James Owens his night's sleep at the moment, because he probably interpreted and officiated that in the way that it was meant to be. And I do have immense sympathy for him, because I think he's been left isolated by the powers that be in refereeing, because nobody has really, not to my knowledge now, and I stand corrected, but nobody has jumped to his defence in that. In real time, it was impossible to kind of agree with, okay? And do I agree with it now? No. But again, he interpreted the rule as it was and probably carried it out to the letter of what it was written as. So for the powers that be who probably made these rules to sit kind of silent as he gets slated again in public, then do you know what I mean? I think it's wrong in so many facets. And, you know, I see it at club level sometimes, like the stick that referees are getting, and sometimes in the cases that they actually put themselves in fear of a danger at the end of a match. And look, again, the decision was made, and it's not James's first bad decision, but Jesus, for everyone to sit by idle and let him take the flak, you know, I think somebody has to shoot to kind of jump to his defence at some stage.
Just by your explanation there, Niall, because I was watching the match live, and obviously it was a bad tackle, we could all see that, but what followed on after that, I couldn't believe my eyes that it went for a penalty and a sin bin, and then as obviously the commentators were explaining, but by your explanation there and saying it's more that he was carrying out the letter of the law, isn't that a major issue with referees, not just in hurling but in Gaelic and soccer? I see it in my own game as well, that it's almost like that common sense is taken out of it, because surely the referee could see for himself that there was absolutely no way whatsoever that was a goal scoring opportunity because of the incident that happened. So if he applied a bit of logic and a bit of common sense to it, rather than what you're saying is literally going by the letter of the law, we wouldn't be having this discussion today.
No, definitely, but again it comes back to the powers that be, and I suppose if you look over the four games of the weekend, the referee who probably gave the most spectator friendly, player friendly decisions was Fergal Horgan, Tipperary. He had a huge role to play in what was a classic game on Saturday between Wexford and Kilkenny. Yes, this is the same guy who a number of years ago, after the Galway Waterford All-Ireland, he didn't see a game for 12 months. So do you know what I mean? Like, as in, these guys, like, they're trying to do the job, they want to be the top of their game. And like they're being left isolated completely here. And look, if you like, and James Owens, I'm sure he's a very, very good GMN. I'm sure he's heavily involved in his own teams. I'm sure he critiques referees who make bullcrap decisions like what he did. But do you know what I mean? This is like, this again is the rule makers. And in any walk of life, that's like, you put something open to interpretation, then it's fraught with danger, because we all interpret every aspect of life differently to the person next door to us. So but has it cast Clare, probably their championship, is in danger of really railroading their championship, because it's very hard to leave that baggage behind them. But again, he refed it to the letter of the law. Should he have used his own interpretation? Yes. But again, lads who are doing it, they're getting punished. So again, like, you know, I'm not going to isolate the man. I just think that he was left isolated by the powers be that are over him.
We had Joe Canning on a few weeks ago, Niall, and he said that he doesn't blame the referees for making the calls that they do, because he knows that they feel like they're under pressure because they're being assessed, and he actually doesn't want there to be assessors for referees anymore. He just believes that, look, they're human, they're trying to do a job, let them do it without that extra bit of pressure on top of them, and let them use their common sense instead of thinking, OK, I could lose out on a big game here because there is somebody marking me down.
Yeah, but exactly, and like, that whole role of the assessors, I don't agree with it. Okay, I really don't agree with it, because it's like anything, when somebody is kind of inspecting your work like that, do you know what I mean? You're going to be under wicked pressure and common sense goes out the window. But Alan, like you used the example there, probably of your game, you said soccer. Like, you're a coach and we're coach for years on end, no different to Marie, Camogie, whatever else, and like, you always look to create a goal scoring opportunity out of nothing. Okay, and if we want to look at the weekend sport, then Oisín O'Rourke set up a goal for Chris Cumming. Ultimately, the position in which Oisín O'Rourke picked up the ball wasn't a whole pile different to where Jake Morris was. Ultimately, the setup of the backs in front of the goals wasn't a whole pile different, but they had been coached and they had been of the mindset that, do you know what, let's have a go for it. The door might close, but while the door is there, let's have a go for it. Okay, a goal came out of it.
But wasn't a rule brought in, Niall, for an individual to create a goal scoring opportunity? So in that instance, Dan Morris gets fouled. Is it not the player who's offended that they're saying he's the one that could possibly go in on goals one on one with the goalkeeper? He was never, ever, ever, I don't care what anyone says, he was never, ever, ever going to score a goal from that position, ever.
And I'm 100% in agreement with you, okay? But again, as in, we're critiquing a referee. Again, like, as in, the idea here behind it is he did what was supposed to be done by the letter of the law, but it's after Caston, a county, they're shot at the championship. It's after, like, it's really, it wrecked what was ultimately up to that point a really, really good Munster semi-final. And look, I know as a player, and especially if you're a player who's in the wrong side of 30, okay, you're there, this guy could be after costing me my last chance at the Munster medal. So the anger that you would feel towards him, yes, is, do you know what I mean? Yeah, I get it. I understand it. Like, again, real time. But I'm standing up for a fella here because I see it. I see it at club level here every day. I see lads going out to referee games. And in some cases, depending on what clubs are involved, they're afraid to make a call because particular clubs might have a reputation for causing trouble coming off a pitch, no different maybe to some levels of junior soccer and referees. Mm. So like, ultimately, like, people say without players we won't have a game. Well, without referees we definitely won't have a game.
Well, we did have a good game between Kilkenny and Wexford, Niall, and that was refereed so well and has been spoken about for quite a while now by Fergal Horgan, and he's getting a lot of praise.
Yeah, and Fergal's a great ref, and Fergal, one thing that Fergal does is Fergal talks to guys as he goes along. Do you know what I mean? And again, look, he's getting great praise, but the game was played in the spirit of what hurling folk like to see. It was tough, hard, hip to hip, and I suppose for the traditionalists, Kilkenny and Wexford used to throw up massive fare going back into the 50s, 60s, 70s, and really that game was just, it was an incredible game. The scores, the contest, and it was real. I know there was a passage played again last night in the Sunday game of a passage that went for a minute and a half, but like, it was just incredulous. Some of the feeling, you know, that is everything that was best in our game. And unfortunately, from all the other counties' perspective, I think we saw the arrival of another stalwart forward in Owen Cody. And I think his namesake, Brian, I'd say when he left, he knew he was after, this guy was after coming of age. And again, I don't particularly maybe see Kilkenny winning the All-Ireland this year, but I think he is a team getting ready for the next 4, 5 or 6 years. And I think once Adrian Mullen gets back to his true form, I think people will want to be aware.
Yeah, for sure. And were Limerick going on their performance at the weekend a team that you could see going on to win an All-Ireland?
I know, we were well back in the pecking after the weekend. just over that, there happened. No, look, in reality, Limerick, look, again, maybe they're victims of their own standards. Do you know what I mean? They'll feel that there was a lot more in them watching the game in real time. And so, just to say, it was brilliant just to be at the game. It was brilliant to meet people that you hadn't seen at a match maybe in 18 months, 2 years. But in real time, I don't think they ever looked as if they were going to be beaten. But in the same breath, I just think that for Cork going into the match, the fears that Cork would have been defensively, and I thought they were brilliant to a man. Do you know what I mean? They kept Limerick to 222, which is well below what their scoring average was. But I just think up front, they were just rudderless. They lacked a little bit of leadership up there. And in fairness, it probably came back again to their over-reliance on Pat Horgan, in the sense that the one day that he didn't turn up, do you know what I mean? That to his level, they hadn't a whole pile outside of him. And they were relying maybe on like Starth Skibben from deep and maybe some kind of hit-and-run points from Jack O'Connor, etc. Like, you know, so... Look, the qualifiers at the moment, they're fraught, and I tell you, that draw, whenever it's made, it's going to be very interesting. What viewing for anyone?
Yeah, it's going to be a bear pit in there, I think. But look, I have to give Dublin so much credit. This weekend actually had everything: drama, controversy, unbelievable contests and battles, and also a big shock with Dublin defeating Galway and deserving all the credit that they're getting.
Yeah, as you just said there, Marie, like the weekend was just, it was phenomenal. You hear fellas there, like Alan, and they're talking about the lads kicking a bit of pig's bladder around Europe there.
Hold on a minute now, Niall. Hold on a minute now.
I like, you know what I mean? They're very good at bigging up their own game when there's nothing much going on there. But that's why they have to make it 90 minutes so they get some bit of proper action. Look, Dublin were brilliant. Did I see them winning? No. Was there any signs in the league? Most definitely not. Really, I think they got their tactics spot on. They got ready probably from a while back. And I think Matty Kenny and his team and his backroom team, they deserve great credit. Like, they took the long picture. They said, look, let's get it right. We're going to have one shot probably off Galway's team once they had Antrim beaten. They're going to have a hop off Galway. They went very, very defensive. Without being at the match, it sounded as if there was two sweepers there. They curtailed the Conor Whelan, who's the live wire up to that. And look, they just came with a little bit of impetus, but I don't think you can kind of go without saying, obviously, sympathies again to the Madden family and to Matty Kenny, his own extended family, and their losses. But I think that emotional impetus, I think you could actually see it in them. There was an edge in them that they had been kind of, that they hadn't had to that point. And Jesus, nobody wants for it to be in the circumstances that it was, but when you both try and honour your family or try and honour your teammate or try and honour your manager, do you know what I mean? You find something different inside in your stomach. And I think Dublin came with it. And I think Galway were just a little bit off, similar to what Waterford were. But by no means rule out Galway. You know,
where did they go from here? Obviously, into
Galway,
the qualifiers.
Galway were dreadful, Niall. They were really poor.
Yeah. And history would teach you in GAA, when you look at a team like Galway and start kind of coming out with these adjectives, it comes back to bite you in the arse. Yeah, they were terrible. They lost their shape. Look, again, and like when a team come with you with a sweeper, okay, you're at this stage, teams know what to do with it, they're coached with it. But when they come with you with a second one, all right, it really asks questions of you, because if you keep pushing up, then it becomes, you know, 4 versus 5 in the forward line, and which means there's a lot more space for those five to operate in. So Galway were kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. And Dublin just, they quenched the space. Do you know what I mean? Galway lost their shape. And then, look, Galway, look, their option taken early on, they went for a couple of goals to try and kill the game. Didn't come. They hit wides. And again, no different to Cork. Like, the day Joe Canning is off, you know, and he was a little bit off his game, and Jesus, it seldom if ever happened, it kind of creates doubt amongst the rest of them. And that might be one of the biggest disappointments to Shane O'Neill, that the day he was off, that maybe Brian Kincannon didn't fire, and, you know what I mean, Conor Cooney didn't fire. You know, but look, they have loads of time to get things ready for qualifiers.
Okay, Niall Moran, as always, thanks so much for joining us. We will check in with you in a few days. Thanks again, and time for a break.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. We are going to talk Euros now, because Alan Cawley, we have our final four. What are your thoughts on what the stage that we're at now?
Oh, it's preliminary, and I think the four that are left are probably there on definitely merit, because they've been probably the four most impressive teams, even though Denmark got off to a poor start in the group. But we all know the factors surrounding that. But they've responded really well. It obviously helped them that the three could qualify, as we know, out of the group. So that did help them. But since then, they've gone on. They've been absolutely so impressive. England have just gone about their business. I think they've gotten better and stronger as the tournament has gone. Albeit they haven't really been tested, Marie. Only against Germany was probably the only big team that they played, and they didn't. Germany weren't up to much anything. So yeah, dear on merit as well. And then you look at the other side. Italy have been the most impressive, particularly even since the first night against Turkey, and everybody's been talking about them since then. They did have a bit of an iffy match against Austria. Austria pushed them really hard. But again, the other night against Belgium, they were back to their best. They were absolutely brilliant. And Spain have made hard work of it, but once the goals came, obviously against Slovakia for Spain, then the brilliant match against Croatia. But I felt the other night they made hard work even against Switzerland. And Switzerland were missing their two best players. Xhaka and Mbolo went off injured as well. And then they had the player sent off, Freuler. So I felt Spain made hard work of it. But I think the four that are left make for a really good semi-finals. And I'm really looking forward to it, Marie.
Well, Stephen Kelly is with us as well. Stephen, Allen's weekend highlight was England's defeat of the Ukraine, and just how impressive that they have been so far this championships. What are your thoughts on England?
They've been excellent. They really have. Me and Alan have been speaking about this so much in the studio, just that, you know, at times, you know, they're getting labelled as a bit boring. The Ukraine wasn't like that at all. They performed really well. They went there. They were so professional about how they went about the job. Defensively were so solid. But then when they went forward, they were quick, and Sterling has just grown in confidence. And you see when he's running at people, he's taking people along. He's back to that Sterling that, you know, everybody, he didn't have a season like that for City, but he's doing it for an international level. And then to have the quality to be able to bring Sancho in and still have Foden and Grealish on the bench, bring on Rashford, like, it's just the attacking options they have are out of this world. And then even Henderson coming on and getting his goal, the amount of feel-good factors that are going through this group of players currently is unlike, I think, every England I've seen for a long, long time. And it's very impressive how Southgate has managed them. It really is.
Yeah, and Alan, I know that you've always been a fan of Southgate, but he doesn't always get a lot of love, and people question his credentials and even whether he should have got a contract extension there a couple of weeks ago. Do you think that people are finally starting to appreciate him, just given how he's been able to adapt his formation and his style of play to suit all the oppositions?
Yeah, I don't know why he hasn't been getting the credit, Marie, because I don't think he's put a foot wrong, really. And obviously he got to the semi-finals of the World Cup, performed brilliantly to get them there. Maybe just fell obviously at the final hurdle, and he even said himself maybe his substitutions in that game against Croatia back in the semi-final might not have been what he wanted them to be, and he's reflected on that and looked to improve as well. Look, I've said it numerous times, I'm a big fan, Marie, and he's been preparing for this tournament since then. Obviously players' form comes in and out in different times, and 6 months ago, maybe 9 months ago, you've been raving about Sterling in terms of his, he would have been nailed on to start. And then you look at his form with Man City towards the end of the season, and he wasn't getting a game for Man City as well. But Southgate has been so loyal to the likes of him, and I think he's been repaid for that. Pickford as well, people were saying he shouldn't be playing in the team.
Including you.
No, did I? But he's been so loyal.
I think what he said was that he was one of the weak links.
But he's proved us all wrong, Marie, to be fair to him. But again, I think that goes back to the relationship that Southgate has with him, and he's never let him down, and he's repaid him now in the performances that he's given. So I think he does deserve an awful lot of credit. They're still only at the semi-finals. People will want him to go on and win it in terms of maybe then giving him the credit finally, but up to now I don't think he's put a foot wrong, and this is probably the best chance they'll ever have to go on and win a major tournament.
Yeah, and Stephen, I think probably because he had so many good players to choose from, there were always going to be different types of opinion on who should be in the starting 11 or not. So he was going to find it very difficult to just keep everybody happy. Not that he has to, he just has to go out and win the matches, and he seems to be doing that. But it definitely helps when Harry Kane starts scoring, I think.
Yeah, well, he is such a pivotal role in this side, and you know, people always said that they wouldn't go very far if he wasn't scoring. He didn't start off great, and he just looks so off the pace. Like, he was so lethargic and pedestrian at times. Just his touch wasn't there. Everything about him, his body language, just didn't seem right in the first few games. But it just takes for a striker to get a goal. Everybody knows that they feed off confidence, and the pressure he would have been under, it's the first time in his career where his head's kind of being turned in a sense of other clubs' interests. He's kind of had a conversation with Spurs about possibly leaving. There's loads of other things going off in the background, and the price tag that would have been put on his head. So loads of external factors that would have probably affected his performance for the first time ever in England shirt. But as soon as that goal went in, you could see the difference in him against the Ukraine and how his performance was, the brightness and sharpness around the box. I still don't think he's reached the full level of capacity that he's capable of, and we've seen over the years at Tottenham. So, you know, him getting stronger as the competition's gone on, it's been amazing. I just think that, but the manager, Southgate, sticking with those players and having the confidence just to say, I'm going to have faith in you, you know, and they're repaying that.
Kane was speaking to Talk Sport just before we came on air, Stephen, and he didn't speak a huge amount about Spurs, but he did talk a little bit about Nuno and how impressed he is with him. And he said he's a great manager, but hasn't spoken to him yet. But that must be positive from a Spurs point of view.
Yeah, I think anything that comes out that's positive from Kane in a Spurs light, the fans are going to be delighted, because, you know, all the talk going into this tournament was that he's leaving, he's going to go, you know, the rigmarole of getting a manager in and how long it went on for, it just seemed like it was going against him staying. But a manager comes in like Nuno, and I just think everybody can see what a good job he did at Wolves. And it wasn't just the organisation getting promoted, it's the style of football they played. They're attacking, they're free-flowing, they're inventive. And it kind of leads into everything Tottenham want to be as a club. It's just whether or not he's got the credentials to push them on, actually get them in the situation where they're winning stuff. And that's going to come down to backing and financial backing from the club. But yeah, nice positive things. But he's still come out and said loads of positive things about Mourinho as well, which has been interesting to listen to.
I'm going to burst Spurs fans' bubble now, Marie, because there's no way he's gone. Forget about it. He has to say that. He came out with the diplomatic answer about Nuno, being respectful towards him. But I think the deal is done. He'll be at Man City next year. Absolutely. I've no doubt in my mind that deal is done.
Stephen?
I would say 100% that's where he wants to go. I just don't know whether a deal is done that quickly because of Daniel Levy. That's the only factor that's in this deal that's causing that to happen. Any other team that was offered 100 million, if they were offered 100 million for a player like Kane, they'd take it. I know what Daniel Levy's like. I've dealt with him before personally. He's not going to want to let him go, and he's not going to want to sell him to a rival. And I know that City, but that's the way he thinks, and he's going to want to get a lot in return. I tell you now, Daniel Levy's going to say, give me Raheem Sterling. That's what he will think. I will want 100 million plus Raheem Sterling and something else. That's the way his brain thinks and it operates.
Will that not be awkward for them then in the camp, just given that that has been reported so widely?
Yeah, it would be awkward, but I think Sterling's a strong enough person of mine that he's not going to want to go anywhere unless he wants to go there. And I think going to Tottenham with him would be a massive downgrade. So that wouldn't be an option, I don't think. I think he would say no to that. So it's just what's going to happen with Kane, and it's not going to be down to him. He can say what he wants, where he wants to go. And it's going to have to take a lot from him to get out. But it's whether or not you can satisfy Daniel Levy for what his valuation is on him. And that's what it's going to come down to.
Okay, well, it's definitely going to be an interesting few months as well with all that coming into play. We'll be previewing those two semi-finals over the next few days. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back now. It was an absolutely crazy weekend of sport, and bang in the middle of it was a thrilling Ireland victory over Japan. Bernard Jackman joins us now. Bernard, when I was thinking about the show for today, I didn't think of the Ireland Japan match would have been as exciting as it was, but it really was brilliant viewing.
Yeah, it was, and I think Japan have stolen the hearts of rugby people around the world with the brand of rugby they play. They scored some amazing tries, and Ireland were put to the pin of the collar to beat them, to be honest. And it took some very direct play, and Caelan Doris in particular really stood up to get us over the game. And Peter Mahoney was outstanding. Gibson Park was pretty sharp, and yeah, we got the win, but it was far from comfortable, to be honest, and it was a kind of game that could have went either way, and having said that, we scored 39 points, which is a great achievement against a Japanese team that are looking to build on what was a very good World Cup for them.
Because of COVID and the lack of fluidity that we've had in the season, it's been so stop-start. There has been quite a lot of focus on Andy Farrell, and just whether the game plan is evolving, whether his squad is evolving. From watching that, what do you think?
Look, I think it's far from perfect. Obviously, the England game finished off a disappointing Six Nations, and this is the first game we've played since then. Definitely, in terms of skill level, there hasn't been the improvement that is needed. So one of the big focus points of the World Cup review was that our skill level wasn't as good as it needs to be to compete with the top teams in the world. And once again, I think in terms of attitude, work rate, desire, there was no difference between Ireland and Japan, but they certainly found scoring tries a lot easier. Their speed of thought and their skill set, their kicking game actually, their attacking kicks was at a level higher than Ireland. So there's still a lot of work to do. You could see glimpses of what Ireland are trying to do, and sometimes it worked really well, and then there was other times just little inaccuracies or a player not fulfilling his role properly led to the ball being turned over. So they have another game obviously Saturday against USA. You'd imagine he'll make some changes, give some of the more inexperienced players some game time, but it'll really be November when they get our Lions players back. I think there'll be big pressure on to start seeing some more complete performances.
And just given where we are in the calendar and the fact that these are test games, should he be at the stage where he is blooding new players, or that we're getting to see some more of the players that have been out injured for quite a while, or is it still about just getting those wins?
Look, there's no doubt that he felt the pressure to get a win against Japan, and he picked the most experienced team that he could. I'd be a little bit critical of the fact that someone like Gavin Coombs was left, left on the bench till the 68th minute. Given he's just been Munster's Player of the Year, given how good he looks and is ready to step up, Craig Casey got, I think, 90 seconds. Now, in fairness, there had been all the back subs had been injured, and he was keeping one back. But again, you would say, we were two scores ahead with 7 or 8 minutes to go. Bringing Craig Casey on and giving him a little bit more game time, I think, is going to be important. Now, maybe he'll start this week and he'll play 60, 70 minutes this week. But I know America were decent against England, but realistically, Japan was a higher level in terms of a test. And you want to see, I want to see certainly the Gavin Coombs, the Craig Caseys, playing for Ireland against better quality opposition and seeing have they the potential that we believe they have.
And just on the lines as well, there's a little bit of drama over there because South Africa's preparations for their game against Georgia are up in the air following a positive COVID case. It does feel, though, that they'll find a way to make these games happen, Bernard.
Yeah, look, I think it'll happen. The only reason I think a test game would fall away is if there's a crisis in terms of front rows. If it's a breakout in the front rows and they can't scrummage, then I think that's the only way it'll fall away. I think there's a big push on. Obviously, the test game isn't for a couple of weeks, so they'll go back into isolation again. They'll get retested. Remember the three players last week who failed tests. One of them turned out to be a false positive. So yeah, it's going to be touch and go, but I think every effort's going to be made. And the Lions play Wednesday night against the Sharks in Joburg again, and Ian Henderson's getting the captain of the team, which is a huge honour for him. And you know, given how well the Lions have played against Japan and against the Sigma Lions, I mean, there's pressure on players now to take their opportunity with, you know, only for some of the money, maybe one game, to put your hand up for Warren Gatland before the Test series starts.
Yeah, but it is a good news story to have Ian Henderson as captain as well, and as you said, when those players come back into the Ireland squad, they'll have gained quite a lot of experience.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a brilliant experience. And, you know, I think we'd have, you know, quite a few guys in the test team. Henderson has a cracking chance. I think him getting captain is a really good sign. Johnny Hill wasn't overly impressive at the weekend. Mario Toje was. So I think the rest of the locks are playing to partner Toje, with obviously Alan Wynne-Jones missing the tour. Although there's rumours he may get back for one of the test games and come down late. But I think Henderson, obviously captain, is a great honour, but I think he has a lot to play for, and the carrot is there if he can have a big game this weekend. He was outstanding for Ireland in the Six Nations, that he could force his way into test team.
Okay, that would be brilliant. Bernard Jackman, thank you so much for joining us, and we will have all those Lions test games against South Africa here on 2FM, so tune in for them. That is all we have time for. Alan Cawley, thank you so much for coming in. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks,
Marie. It's time for us to go.
Game on. Check out the podcast
on the RTÉ Radio Player app.